We have been doing a series from the book of Ecclesiastes, Psalms, and Proverbs called Attitudes for Success. It's not success as we normally think of it in the world's way, but in terms of living a successful life, and that involves a lot of things, marriage and raising kids and your personal life, not just as we think about it, our career. By way of review, the five things, the first one is, the first attitude that God is trying to build into us is the fear of the Lord. And when you think of the fear of the Lord, the word to think about is boundaries. That there are, and you can think of this stage as sort of, God says you're to live on here, on this stage, but if you, there's a fence here, and if you go beyond that fence, if you go beyond my boundaries, there is a dear price you're going to pay. There's going to be trouble on the other side of that. Even though it doesn't seem like there's trouble, it seems like that should be just fine. It could be okay. But there's going to be trouble, and you're going to bring shame upon yourself, and you're inviting pushback from God because he loves you. He's not going to let you stay in a position where you're going to continue to do harm to yourself and others. In the same way that you as a parent would do the same thing with your children. You provide pushback over the years. First one is fear of the Lord. Second one is trust in the Lord. If you think of fear of the Lord as boundaries, trust in the Lord is not just I believe that God exists, but this quality is you are trusting God for outcomes. Now, you're not trusting him necessarily for the outcomes you want. Sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. It's always nice when I'm trusting God and the outcomes I hope will happen. I like that. But there are plenty of times in life where the outcomes I'm hoping will happen don't happen. So there what trust means is I am trusting God that no matter what the outcome happens to be, he is a redemptive God that's going to use this for my good or for our good. That's trust. That amount of trust provides you with a tremendous sense of peace when you are in the middle of the roller coaster. And third quality is humility. And if you think of humility, I like to think of it, the Bible would speak of it as position. I am not God. I am not the one to decide what the boundaries are, where the fence is. That's God's part. He's the creator. I'm the createe. I am not more important than my wife. I am not more important than my kids. I am not more important than my neighbors. I am not the center of my universe at work. Instead, I am a servant. My job is to serve the people wherever I happen to be, whether that's on my street, or in my home, or on my street, or in our church, or in your work, wherever you happen to be. It's an attitude that you have about yourself. I'm here to be a blessing to the people I'm with. The fourth quality is teachability, and you can think of this as shortcuts, legitimate shortcuts. You do not have to learn all the greatest important lessons in life by banging your head against that wall. You can learn from others. And I would highly recommend that. Today, we look at the fifth one, patience. And you can think of the word harvest here. Think of the word harvest. The motif that the Bible describes here is that of the farmer. The title of today's message is Patience, Enjoying the Fruit of Your Life Without Bitterness. Enjoying the fruit of your life without bitterness. Years ago, 26 years ago, my wife and I moved to California here to start a church. We didn't know anybody. We'd helped start a church in Fort Worth, Texas. It was a great experience. We loved it. I'd been on staff there at our church for 8 years and really felt God calling us to move here. And we moved here and we were, you know, early 30s or 33 years old, excited about the Lord and this new venture here. And we started off, we had our first service Easter of 1986. And we were in several different rented facilities for about 10 years. And, you know, as you look back on that, you know, it's pretty exciting, starting a new venture, and we were very excited about this. But I can tell you, it was way harder than I imagined. Way harder than I imagined. When we started a church in Texas, there were a team of us, there were 15. And we had some pretty really kicking people. I wasn't the lead guy on that, so I had a chance to watch, you know, my mentor lead out in here. We just had a very small team, five of us, that were very inexperienced. And it was much harder than I thought. When we started worship in 1986, for the next 7 years, other than 5 Sundays, my Sunday morning experience when everybody was gone, well, this was at the mainly the Boys and Girls Club over in Woodbridge, when everybody was gone, coffee was done, everything was cleaned up, and I was the last one to leave, I would walk out to my car in the parking lot and either sit inside the car if it was, had a little weather going on, or most of the time sitting on the hood of my car and having a dialogue something like this. You know, God, I just don't know if I have what it takes to do this. This is way harder than I imagined. And it just seems like our little church is just hanging on by a thread every week, just little by little. I had a picture of a mobile, you know, the thing you put up above the little newborn's crib, you know, and all these little things that flutter along. And the picture was that if you came along with even a pair of nail file clippers and clipped one of those little strings, all of the little pieces of our mobile just... Or another image I had of our church during those first 7 years was sort of a house of cards. You open a deck of cards and you stick one card here and one card here and hope that those two will lean against each other. Then you add a third card and a fourth card. You add a roof. Then you add another room. And at some point you're trying to add a second story. I usually don't get too far on that one. But it doesn't take much for that house of cards to come... And for 7 years, except for about 5 Sundays, this is about 350 Sundays, I'm sitting on my car thinking, I just don't know if we're going to make it. I just don't know if I think I'm over my head. After 7 years, I remember sitting there one day, and I had a light bulb that went off, and a completely different thought. A thought that went from, I don't know if I have what it takes to really do this, I think I'm over my head, to this thought, God, you're going to do this, aren't you? This is something you are going to do. And I'm just sort of kind of riding in the stagecoach on this. You're the stagecoach driver, and I'm sort of the passenger here. Now, I tell you that just to tell you that if you want to do something, if you want to do something important, whether it's a ministry or your job or a marriage or kids, some venture in the community where you want to make a difference, it is usually much harder than we imagine, and it requires a tremendous amount of perseverance. And there are a lot of times along the way where the temptation is to do one of two things. This is way too hard. I didn't sign up for all of this CRAP. I'm out of here. And you bail. That's option one. The other option is to say, I know I'm supposed to do this, and I'm going to stick it out. I don't like it, but I'm going to keep going no matter what. And over time, your heart hardens and you become bitter. Neither one of those are options. Neither one of those are things God is trying to do in my life. He is trying to work in me a strength that sticks with it and continues to give and to give and to invest myself into the venture, whether it's marriage or teenagers or the church or your work. And at the same time, to be formed in such a way that he is doing something cool in who I am, in my character. Patience in your handout has its origins in God. One of the amazing things about God is that one of the phrases that's used in the Old Testament is God is a God who is long-suffering. Long-suffering. Now, he's long-suffering with the likes of me and the likes of you. Romans 15:5, may the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you a spirit of unity among yourselves as you follow Christ. Second, patience is worthy of great honor. Paul was writing back to the church at Thessalonica that he had started. He'd only been there 3 weeks. Got them going, sent him a first letter, and then some time passed, he sent him a second letter. Notice what he says in chapter 1. Among God's churches, we boast about what? Your theology? How cool your building is? We boast about your perseverance and faith in all the persecutions and trials you are enduring. Third, patience is to characterize God's people. Colossians 1 says, being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience, may you be filled with joy. The word endurance there means to hold up under extended hardship. Not just something that comes in and a week later it's gone, but this thing has sort of come and it's moved in. Endurance. Fourth, the key to enjoying his promises. Hebrews says, we do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what's been promised. We go through a tough time, and we go scrambling to the Bible looking for a Bible promise, which is a good idea. I've done this many times. And you find a Bible promise, and you hang on to that promise for, say, 3 days. And after 3 days, I'm sick and tired of this. What God really calls us to again and again and again is to press on. And to press on. And to press on, holding on to that Bible verse, that promise. Next, patience is the attitude for adversity. The word adversity in the Greek means grave, persistent misfortune. Grave, persistent misfortune. We start out with a goal. We want to have a great marriage, or we have kids and we want to grow up and have neat kids, or we start a business and we want to do well, or a new job. You have a goal of doing well in your job or your career. And inevitably, what you're going to find is it's going to be a lot tougher than you thought. And when that happens, oftentimes we're surprised, shocked, that we should have to go through this kind of thing. In fact, usually what happens is the reality of life is the greater the goal, the greater the adversity. Some of you have lived this out. And so have I. Adversity, next, is normal. It's normal. We live in the area that fast, thing, society, everything's done. We watch a TV show, there's some big crisis that happens. Except by the time the commercials come 26 minutes later, it's just pretty much resolved. Or maybe an hour, or even a two-hour show. Everything is pretty nice and tidy, all done. Even in documentaries, sort of the same kind of mindset can creep in. I remember about 12 or 13 years ago, my favorite documentary, the Ken Burns Civil War series. I mean, I was just enthralled. And I remember, I don't know how many, 8 or 9 or 10 sessions, and sitting in my living room, watching, 2 or 3 hours, just engulfed in this show and watching this production. And, but at the end of 8, 9, or 10 weeks, I was kind of done. But that war lasted 4 years, about 4 years, and cost, as I mentioned earlier, 600,000 men's lives, more lives than all of the soldiers we've lost in all of our wars combined. And there were more people that died of disease than died of war wounds. To me, I sat in my living room for 8 or 9 weeks and sipping on my coffee. Adversity is normal. One of the images I have, unfortunately, in my mind, is adversity often is sort of like a suitcase. All of a sudden, it's in my house. It's here to stay a while. It's not likely to leave anytime soon. It's going to unpack itself. On the inside of your handout, Ecclesiastes says, however many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all, but let him remember the day of darkness, for they will be many. We really don't believe that, do we? We think it's going to be different. And then patience overcomes adversity, but it doesn't stop it. Patience overcomes adversity, but it doesn't stop it. Better a patient man than a warrior, a man who controls his temper than he who takes a city. When you're going through a tough time, you need patience. And if you miss that, you bring some extra heartache in the middle of your adversity. Is that Melanie? Your mom is right over here. What is patience? What is patience? The Greek word is hupomone. And the word is a rich Greek word. It has sort of three elements that go into this. The first element is it's something that bears up. It's under a weight, and it's bearing up. Leg press, bearing up under this weight. The second element of this is it's dire. There are dire circumstances. This is like a crisis. And the third element is it's not going to quit. It refuses to quit. Or when I think of this, what I try to remember is sort of the three things similar to this. In the middle of a crisis or when I need to persevere, is my commitment is I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to respond with what's right. And I am not going to quit. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to respond with what's right. And I'm not going to quit. Why is patience so important? It results in God's blessing. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. Because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. There is coming a day when I'm going to look back on all the stuff that we've persevered with in our 33 years together. And I'm going to say, I am glad that I stuck it out, that we stuck it out, that we continued together through this. It will be worth it. There are a lot of times when it doesn't seem like it now. But there is coming a day. That's a promise I'm claiming. Second, it results in fully developed Christian character. Dear brothers, is your life full of difficulties and temptation? Then be happy, for when the way is rough, your patience has a chance to grow. This is the Living Bible. I love this little translation. Now, we really don't think like this at all. I didn't count on having to learn patience in marriage. I didn't sign up for that. I didn't count on having to learn patience with a newborn whose sleep cycle is completely upside down. I didn't sign up for that. I didn't sign up to learn patience with the terrible twos. I didn't sign up to have to learn patience with the teenagers for all these years. Well, of course not. What I signed up for was a piece of cake. That's what I was really kind of hoping for. But this is the only way we learn, really. It's the only way patience is formed in us. It's through tests and trials. Verse 4, he says, so let it grow. Don't try to squirm out of your problems. When your patience is in full bloom, then you will be ready for anything, strong in character, full and complete. Well, God, isn't there a way that I can learn patience by going to Disneyland? Seems like there ought to be another way to do this. How's Magic Mountain? No. Tests. It results in exponential payback, both in time and in eternity. Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. And then he gives you a visual. See how the farmer waits in the land for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. See the imagery here? He thinks of a farmer. The guy clears his field. He plants his seed. The spring rains come. Swell! Not going to be that long before we're going to have a crop. But that's not how this works. Because once spring is over, summer comes. Now, we lived in Texas for a while. I would not recommend that to anyone. Especially in the summer. I would hate to be a farmer in Texas. Because you just can't sit back in the farmhouse and expect that crop's going to do anything by itself. You've got to be out in that field, tilling the field, cultivating the plants, weeding that thing, fertilizing, making sure that bugs and pests don't mess with that crop, and making sure that between the spring rain and the autumn rain, that there's some water on those crops. That's a lot of work. It's a lot of patience. And this crop thing, this grows just so slowly. That's the imagery, he says here, for patience. You're like a farmer. Be patient. Stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Some opposites to patience. Pride. The end of the matter is better than the beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Let's say that you, your wife says to you, honey, I've got to have another car. My car is just pathetic. And so you decide you're going to go out Saturday, and you're hoping that, you know, maybe an hour or two, and you have this thing wrapped up. And you go to dealer after dealer after dealer, and the cars that she likes, you know you really can't afford. You see some cars you can't afford and that she should be able to like, but she just doesn't. And you go to one car after the next car, after the next car, to the next dealer, to the next car, the next car, to the next dealer, to the next car, to the next car, to the next dealer. Now, what happens inside of you? We get mad. What happens at the end of the day, she really still hasn't found anything she likes and you can afford. And she says to you, well, maybe we should do this again next Saturday. Give me a ladder and a rope. I didn't sign up for this. Why should I have to do this? Anger. Proverbs 19:11. A man's wisdom gives him patience. It is his glory to overlook an offense. You have something in your work, there's a project you've been wanting to get to. You finally have time to get to it. You're so excited because you really like this project. And you get into this project, and the boss comes to you and says, well, actually, we really need you to do this over here. It's much more important. We need you to. So just shelve that aside. Okay. And so you give yourself to this project. And you work at it, you work at it, you work at it. You finally get that thing done. You're ready to get back over to this project that you just find so delectable. And suddenly, there's no money in the budget to do that particular project. There was money back when I was ready to do the project the first time. And so you have to wait till there's money. Then there's money to do the project. I can finally do the project, and I have the money to do it. But suddenly, no one wants to help you in that project. And what happens at work? You see this all the time. Somebody explodes. Doesn't anybody care about what I do around here? You do that. That's a big mistake. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man, or you may learn his ways and become ensnared. Snared means you have just put yourself in a trap of your own making. Disgrace is the next one. The quick-tempered man does foolish things. It doesn't take long with your temper to besmirch your reputation that maybe you took years to develop. And all it takes is one time. It's also true with your kids. And this is when it gets tough during those teen years. Haste is another opposite to patience. It's not good to have zeal without knowledge. He who is hasty misses his way. When you are facing big decisions, it is not a good idea to get this decision made quickly and to move on after that. This is something that takes wisdom and takes some counsel. You want to talk to some people that you trust about this. Big decisions, big direction. If you're standing in the line at Jack in the Box and want to order something, you don't need to get counsel. Will I get cheese on it or bacon? Flip a coin. But there are some big things you better not be hasty on. Do you see a man who speaks with haste? There's more hope for a fool than for him. I can't tell you when I was younger how many times I would get riled up inside about what somebody was saying and then just have to say, I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. Only to discover there were some missing pieces of the story I didn't have. And I end up looking like a complete moron. Do not want to do that. He who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. If you have a big decision, it is not a good thing just to back up, decide what you want to do, and go leaping toward that decision and jump for all you're worth. If you're single and you're thinking about getting married, this is a decision that needs some thought and some time and some counsel. you're thinking about taking a job halfway across the country, this is a decision that takes some time and some counsel and some thought. You do not want to make this decision by yourself. On the back side of your handout, let's wrap this up. Patience develops through trials. I wish there was another way I could say that. More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character. Character produces hope. This is tough. I'm still in school on this one. I'm still learning. My initial reaction when a trial comes is to be discouraged. To just sort of want to crawl over in the corner and melt into a little puddle and just hope it goes away somewhere. And it's like God is saying, you know, Seth, that's who you used to be. That's not the kind of man I'm trying to make you be. I want you to be a man who stands here and says, I'm going to trust you that you're going to do what is right. I may not like it, or I may like it. But you're going to do, the God of all the world, all the earth will do what is right. My response is important, and what I'm going to do as a response is also important. Patience is not just sitting over here idly by, rocking on my front porch, whittling away with my knife and piece of wood. All good things come to him who waits. That's not the picture of patience. Patience is, I'm going to respond right. I'm going to do what's right while I wait. And I'm not going to quit. That's this attitude. That's what God is trying to build in you and me. Revelation 1, John says, I, your brother and companion. And then this is an unbelievable verse. I wish some of our most famous TV preachers would catch this verse. I, John, your brother and companion in the suffering and kingdom and patient endurance that are ours in Jesus. He was on the Isle of Patmos in exile, away from everybody, due to the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. He's not out there saying, I give up, I did my best, I'm bailing. He's writing some of the most important books we have in the Bible. The Gospel of John. 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. And this one, Book of Revelation. While he's in exile. Not for doing bad, but because of his faith. And then lastly, farm your difficulties. We come back to the main imagery here. Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop. How patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. Be patient. Stand firm because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against each other or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Maybe in your marriage, you're a farmer. Maybe you got a little two-year-old who's going through the terrible twos. You're a farmer. Maybe you've got a teenager and you're in what I think of as the black hole of parenting. You know, where on a good day, your teenager considers you something like fake plastic palm over there on a good day. About the only answers you get from them are, That can go on for a long time. That gets really, really old. Maybe in your work, you're a farmer. Maybe in your career, you're farming. Maybe in your ministry, with your life group, men's ministry, women's ministry, whatever it is you're involved in, children's ministry, you're a farmer. He says, keep sowing seed. Don't just say, oh, I'm tired of farming, go back to the barn, expect it's going to take care of itself. Keep getting yourself out on that field and weed. Hoe this thing. Make new furrows for the water to get where it needs to get to the roots. Get out there and spray those things so the bugs don't take away your crop. It's hot, really. Hot. Yeah, it is hot. Every day it's hot. I hate heat. I despise heat. I don't like to sweat unless I'm running or biking. He says, keep getting out on that field. You persevere. You want to build something important, you got to stick with it. You're going to do what's right, you're going to respond with what's right, and you are not going to quit, all the while waiting, hoping that the outcome one day will be what God wants, and it'll be a good outcome, and you'll go, I am so glad I hung on during those dark days. Galatians says, let us not become weary in well-doing, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest. If we do not give up, if the farmer leaves in the middle of the heat in August because he's so tired of this, I've had it with this, I hate, he's not going to have a harvest come October. As we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Three last images. Endure suffering along with me, Paul says to Timothy. Endure suffering along with me. Endure suffering along with me. Three images. As a good soldier of Christ. Good soldier. It's a great image. Soldiers don't get tied up in the affairs of civilian life, for then they cannot please the officer who enlisted them. God, I'm ultimately going to endure, not because I want to be satisfied or for my happiness, but because one day I'm going to stand in your presence and when I see your face and I know that I endured through hard times to please you, it's going to be worth it. Think of him as your commanding officer here in this image. The second image. And athletes cannot win the prize unless they follow the rules. Now, you need to follow the rules. And when we do racing, we follow the rules. But I'll tell you, that's really not my problem. My problem is athletes cannot win the prize unless they train. That's my problem. Getting my shoes on and getting my body parts out the door in the morning. Or getting on my bike. Or getting in the pool when it's kind of cold out. And I'd rather be doing almost anything else, including backwashing my water pick. Perseverance. Hardworking farmers should be the first to enjoy the fruit of their labor. 33 years ago, Mindy and I got married. And we talked about what was our life going to be like and what were our commitments that we were going to make to each other. And one of the commitments we made was through our years, we were going to die right, doing what is right, rather than live wrong. Didn't matter what kind of sacrifice we were going to have to do. Somehow, God being our helper, we were going to respond right, we're going to do what's right, and we're not going to quit. Not going to leave for another farm, just because another farm might look easier, or another place of battle because the battle's not so hot and heavy over there. Wherever God has us, we're going to plant ourselves, we're going to respond with what is right, we're going to do what is right, we're going to wait, trusting him for the outcomes, whether they be outcomes we like or outcomes we don't like, knowing that God is good and he will not rip us off. That's this quality we finish with of patience. Next week, we'll look at how the five attitudes work together.